Viktor Frankl said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson. Stay tuned for the next hour as Sue explores the human psyche, what makes us tick, and how to live better, more fulfilled, and more meaningful lives. Only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program. And today I'd like to dedicate this program to the hostages still held in the tunnels of Gaza. 669 days and nothing from the Red Cross, not even one visit to them. And the UN remain silent over this. It's absolutely appalling. The media of the world appear to have forgotten them and instead reward Hamas. There are 50 hostages that remain in Gaza, 20 believed to be alive. If they are not released soon, there'll be none alive. The New York Times on Sunday had a big picture of a starving Israeli in the tunnels of Gaza. And the European leaders seem to have just pushed this aside, even though it was on huge billboards in New York, and nobody seemed to really care about this. I really am hoping that people will look at this and see. It says the Hamas forced the hostage to dig his own grave. And there's this emaciated young man and absolutely starved with a spade that he could hardly lift in his own grave. Now, if the world cannot feel sympathy for that, I don't know what has happened to our world. But today I am going to be focusing on a particular topic called anticipatory fear. What is this? It's actually fearing the worst scenario, and it's fear before fear, which is quite interesting because Mark Twain said, "I'm an old man and have known a great many troubles, but most of them never happened." So there was a heading that said anticipatory anxiety is bleeding before you are cut. And I found that very interesting because if I think about it, I think I mentioned last week that I have a few fears, definitely. But if you think about the matrix who are about to start writing prelims, the fear that goes into those anticipation of what those prelims are going to be like is absolutely shocking. I mean, those kids look exhausted by the end of matric, and this is for prelims. And then, I mean, think about going in for an injection or the dentist. How many people fear the dentists? What about an MRI, going into those machines? I certainly know people very close to me who have a fear of, not really a fear of flying, but of flights being delayed and taxis being late, so you miss the flight and so on. It doesn't ever happen, but people, that's what you are fearing. And that's the anxiety, the bleeding before you're actually cut. Viktor Frankl said, "Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. And in our response lies our growth and our freedom." And if we are wanting that freedom, we need to look at what is causing our anxiety. I would like to just tell you something that Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks of blessed memory said. He said, "When we shed tears this Tisha B'Av, let us at least thank God for the courage and the greatness of the people of Israel. We would rather have the state of Israel and the condemnation of the world than, God forbid, no state of Israel and the sympathy of the world." And that was actually, I think he put out in about 2014, and he said, "Choose life, so that you and your children may live. He quoted Moses' words there. And he was saying that in a time of turmoil for the Jewish people, and that's what we are going through at the moment, we need to look at what is really happening, or what is our responsibility for one another. And he believed that learning from past mistakes and fostering unity were crucial to overcoming the challenges facing Israel and the Jewish people. And when you look at Israel today, this is definitely what we are being asked for, to have unity between all our different sects. And only in that way can we hold on to the knowing that everything will ultimately work out. That's, I think, one of the greatest fears that people are feeling at the moment, that anticipatory anxiety for all our family and our friends and for Israel, and wondering what on earth is going to happen. When we see the marches that happened in Sydney, over Sydney Bridge, the iconic Sydney Bridge, I might add, 100,000 people marching pro-Palestinian, well, 90 to 100,000. It's very frightening, it really is. But that's not what we're going to be really holding on to today, because I want to look at how do we face these fears and move forward with this anticipatory anxiety. And one of the great ways is through hope. And another thing that Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks said, and it's a legacy of his, that hope rebuilds the ruins of Jerusalem. The Jewish people kept hope alive, and hope kept the Jewish people alive. And that is the message of Tisha B'Av. For those of you who don't know what Tisha B'Av is, we've just had it. It's a very solemn day. It's a day of destruction of temples and lots of bad things happening in Jewish history. And it's a fast day, and we had it on Sunday. So he said that this is the saddest day in the Jewish calendar, with the destruction of both the first and the second temples. But then we have to hold on, the power of hope. And I have had the privilege of working with many people facing the end of their lives. And I have seen how hope has come in many ways. And sometimes it's amazed me. The hope has come in the hope of the future for their family, hope of a future for people coming after them, that they will remember them, but they will also get on with their life. And I've always found that incredibly uplifting, that people are able to get over their own fear of dying, of the pain, of whatever they're facing, and think of somebody else or a purpose greater than themselves, which is absolutely amazing. Now, Israel's attitude is also one of taking destiny into their own hands. And this is what I have been taught, I must admit, in all my work through the years, has been people's attitude, taking their destiny into their own hands.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
You're now going to be listening to a very short audio clip called The Wings That Forgot to Fly.
Sometimes comfort is the greatest danger. This is the story of an island where vultures had everything except what truly mattered. Once, a flock of vultures flew over the ocean and landed on a beautiful island. It was calm, green, and full of food. Fish, frogs, and small sea creatures. Best of all, there were no predators. "This is heaven," said one young vulture. "No hunting, no flying, just food and rest. Let's stay forever," they all agreed. Slowly they stopped flying. Their wings got weaker Their claws grew dull. Life became lazy, easy, and full of comfort. But one old vulture watched all this silently. He had seen the real world, and he was worried. One day, he called everyone and said, "This place has made us weak. We need to go back to the jungle. That's where real life is. If danger comes, none of you will be able to escape." The young vultures laughed. "You're just scared, old one. We're safe here. Why go back to suffering?" The old vulture warned again. "Your wings have forgotten the sky. Your claws are soft. What will happen when the real test comes?" No one listened, so he flew away alone. Months passed. One day, a ship came to the island. From it, they released leopards. At first, the leopards stayed calm, but soon they noticed. These vultures couldn't fly anymore. Then the horror began. One by one, the vultures were hunted and killed. They couldn't escape, couldn't fight. After a few months, the old vulture returned, and what he saw broke his heart. Dead vultures everywhere. Silence. Destruction. He found one young, wounded vulture, barely alive. "What happened?" he asked. The young one replied, "You were right. We forgot how to fly, how to fight, and they killed us. We couldn't survive. I wish we had listened." The old vulture sat quietly, nothing more to say. The sky above was still blue, but the wings that once ruled it were now still. Sometimes the comfort zone in life becomes a silent trap where we slowly lose our strength, skills, and courage. As long as we keep facing discomfort, challenges, and struggles, we stay strong from within. But the moment we choose only comfort, we begin to drift away from the truth of life. And when trouble suddenly appears, we find ourselves unprepared, unable to fight or even fly. That's why it's important to regularly push ourselves into challenges so we can stand firm in any situation life throws at us. If this story touched you, take a moment to reflect. Are we too stuck in a comfort zone without even knowing it? If this made you think, then like it. Share it with someone who needs it and subscribe for more stories like this. Because stories aren't just told, they're felt.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue on the Finding Human program. If you'd like to send any messages, please do so on Telegram 061-895-1019. I also need to tell you, because I'm often asked about how to access podcasts on High FM. You know, there is a free app, the High FM app is a free app. And on there, you can either listen live or you can pick up any of the podcasts. You just have to go into podcasts and go through to see who you want to listen to. There are all the podcasts there for each day as well. So, you know what, I have often been asked for that, and I thought I must share that with you. The other thing I wanted to say was that I was supposed to have an elderly gentleman on with my program today, but there were a few confusions, so might have come from my age or his age. I'm not sure which, but I'm on my own. Anyway, you heard that audio clip. And in it, he says, we need to step out of our own. And I really do believe that since the 7th of October, 2023, that is what we are being asked, not only as Jewish people, but worldwide. Everybody, we are all being asked to look deeper into what the world is asking of us now, not to become the mouthpiece from the different images that we're seeing or the different media narratives that are being fed to us. We're all being asked to tap into our own strength. And, you know, it's that video said, that audio clip said, we forgot how to fly and how to fight. Well, we certainly can't say that for the IDF, but we need to look at ourselves. How have we remembered how to fly? Have we remembered how to fight? Not to sit back when something seems very unfair. And I admire so many young children today. Many of them are being bullied on social media. And yet they step forward, they go back to school, they face their fears. And this is amazing. But if you know someone who's being bullied, whether it's an adult or a child, please don't sit idly by. Please step forward into your own light and show what is not fair. Because right now, there's so much that is actually not true. It's this mass misinformation that we're being fed. And many of the European nations are coming together and condemning Israel. And, you know, condemning Israel is also condemning the Jews. I think we need to remember that. There are many self-hating Jews who are coming out against their own people, as we've seen. And they get a lot of coverage, of course, because people think they are absolutely amazing. But other thing that we are being fed so much of are the images of starving Gazans, of starving children. And that is definitely I'm not denying that there are areas where there definitely is a need for food, without doubt, in Gaza. But they are working on the Jews and all Israel, actually, whoever, and it's certainly not an apartheid state, so whoever's living there. We have a love of children, a great love of children. So anything that shows images of starving children in Gaza hits us very, very deeply in a deep part of our soul. This is part of the fear of the future, of wondering if there is a future. What is going to happen to us? How can we together march forward, not necessarily in a protest march, but march forward with our own truth, our own belief in humanity, in a humanity that can be saved, a world that can be saved. Right now, it's dicey, without doubt. I also heard that the looters at the moment in Gaza are the ones looting the aid trucks. They are watching very carefully because apparently a lot of flour has been allowed in, and so the prices have gone down. They're reselling it, so the resale prices are less. So they now look to hijack the trucks with fuel and sugar. But we're not going to be hearing about that. Viktor Frankl said, as I said, you know, what in our response lies our growth and our freedom in the space which is in between our space, between stimulus and response. So when we see something like that, we need to educate ourselves. Is it true? What is really happening? And then, of course, a very, very big thing is energy transfer. And energy transfer is real. Now, what does that mean? We must be mindful of who we let into our inner space. Who are we socializing with? Who is pulling us down because of their energy? We've got to stay away from people who draw us into their negative energy. We need to be mindful of this, even in places we go to. Be mindful of it and decide, well, I'm going to step back. We have that choice. Often we think, I don't want to embarrass this person or whatever we're doing. But in actual fact, it's not a case of embarrassing someone. It's a case of protecting our own energy. And just please remember that energy transfer is real. So when you go out into a meeting, into the shops, into a restaurant, wherever you're going, See who's around you. Who have you invited into your space? And, you know, the strange thing is, one of my grandchildren once told me that they thought that someone was really just so fantastic until they got to know them a bit more and realized that actually they were very negative in their life. And it took great courage to step back from them. But that is something that we need to do. Step back from the negativity. There's too much negativity in the world. We do not need to bring it into our socializing, into our homes, or anywhere else. Now, Viktor Frankl spoke about the different ways of coping with anticipatory anxiety. As I said, this is a type of anxiety where we anticipate and worry about future events, which may never ever occur. But they are there. And I know I myself are waking up during the night and thinking, oh, I must just turn on the news and see what's happening in Israel at the moment. And, you know, I can drive myself crazy with that. And I've stopped myself. I've said to myself, no ways, you cannot do that. And that's called dereflection. And that's something that Viktor Frankl spoke about as a tool in this anticipatory anxiety to cope with this anticipatory anxiety and fear. It's a dereflection which shifts us away from the focus of ourselves, and we can move our thoughts onto something else, something that can help us. Breaking the cycle of anxiety. That is what's very important. Imagining that you can also, he calls about paradoxical intention, but I don't believe that this can be helpful with where Israel is concerned, because that is imagining the event happening and helping with it. And I once told the story of a man who he was dying of HIV/AIDS, and he was in a setting. He lived in literally a one-bedroom shack with his family, and hospice nurses were going in and visiting, and they saw that he was very angry, and she asked the family what was happening, and they said, we can't do anything right for him. He just complains to us about everything. Even if we walk in, he says, you're going to be hurting me, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, part of this anticipatory anxiety. And the nurse said to him, what's the matter? And he said, no, they're poisoning me, they're doing this, they're doing that. Anyway, so she said, come. And she helped him to walk outside of this shack, which was very clean and tidy, and he had the only proper bed in it. And she took him outside, and there were big rocks outside, boulders, and she put a blanket down, and he sat on the one boulder. And she said, I want you to imagine that you are looking through the roof of your house, and what are you seeing? And she walked away, and she left him there for a little while. And when she came back, he was crying. And she said to him, what are the tears for? And he said, the tears are for the waste of my life. How I've wasted my life on thinking that I've been poisoned, on thinking the worst about what's happening. So she said, well, what is happening? He said, well, you know, I thought my daughter-in-laws were poisoning me by giving me too much sugar. And I told them, you're poisoning me. But he said, now I see that they didn't have sugar themselves, and nor did any of the children, because they were trying to build my energy up. Then he said he noticed the children. Time the children came past him, he used to get very, very angry because they would knock his foot. He said, now I see that they weren't knocking my foot in anger or telling me to move. It was their way of saying, we are still here. You are still here. And we recognize you. This unbelievable way of self-distancing and looking from a different place healed this man's dying process to such an extent that he did die a few days later, a week or so later, I think. And when the hospice nurse went in to go and do a visit to the family, a bereavement visit, she said, how were his last few days? And they said to her, what did you do with him outside? They thought it was some sort of magic. And they said, what did you do that he changed so much? So she said, well, how did he change? And they told her that he became so loving, so grateful for everything. He wanted to thank them. He wanted to pat the children on their heads. He couldn't thank them enough for all they had done for him as he was reaching the end of his life. And to me, that has been a true story of what we can all do. Thank God hopefully we're not facing the end of our lives. But if we are facing any form of trouble that is really causing us huge anxiety, huge fear, let's step aside. Let's look as though we're looking from above, almost like a helicopter going over the top of us. And we're in that helicopter and we're looking what's happening below us. I suppose nowadays we would say it's a drone. Let's be the drone. Let's be the drone of our own lives. And let's look and see what we can improve in our life and in that way help others or our relationships with others. I would like to tell you about someone who definitely has risked everything to expose the truth. And at last, the world is actually recognizing it. And this was on Stand Tall Israel's site. And it said, congratulations to Mossad Hassan Youssef on his 2025 Nobel Peace Prize nomination, a powerful voice for peace and freedom. And I'm going to get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, you're about to hear a short video clip. Be proud of your scars.
When a bowl is broken in Japan, it's put back together with the cracks being filled, creating a beautiful lining. This is to emphasize the beauty in what was once broken. They believe that when something has suffered damage and has a history, it makes it more beautiful. And the same goes for human beings. Everything that you've been through, everything that you're going through, doesn't make your life uglier. Although it may seem that way when we're going through it, it's up to us to choose to paint our struggles with gold and make it beautiful. You are not broken beyond repair. You can pick yourself up and learn from what's happened and become a better person from it because of the struggle that you've been through. You can wear your scars proudly as a badge of honor, as if to say, look at what I've been through. It's made me who I am today, and I can get through anything life puts in front of me now. Nobody has had a perfect life, and nobody ever will. It's only up to us if we choose to paint our broken pieces gold and make it beautiful. Don't be ashamed of what's happened to you. Everything that has happened to you has happened to you for a reason. So the more we deny, the more we complain and don't accept what's happened to us, then it doesn't become useful. The moment that we accept and find what's useful in the struggle, the things that we've been through, that's just like us painting the cracks in our broken pieces gold, turning something that could be ugly into something beautiful and inspiring. When what you have been through is inspiration for other people, then it was all worth it. So don't get stuck on how things used to be. I once heard a quote that said, every next level of your life will demand a new you. And sometimes it takes being broken in order to become that new version of yourself. So if you're going through hard times, I hope this video can help you or somebody that you love. My name is Sean Buranahiran. Sawasdee krap.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, this is Sue Jackson on the Finding Human program, and you were listening to that audio clip, Be Proud of Your Scars. I have played it before. It's the Japanese kintsugi method of filling the cracks with gold so that you can fix. If you look it up, you'll see them fixing bowls with gold. It's beautiful. And I think our scars is what we need to look at. Our scars are our medals. We've earned them. So are we going to fill them with Botox, plastic surgery, or are we going to fill them with gold? Personally, today I filled my many wrinkles, which are part of the scars, with good makeup. But on a not-so-funny level, as he said, the next level actually requires that we do become broken in order to become the new you. And how often have you gone through a really hard time in your life? Maybe it's a loss or a re-looking at our own lives and reinventing ourselves. And that is an incredibly hard thing to do, to reinvent ourselves. But that's what we are being asked to do so often, of looking at what are the gifts, what are my strengths that perhaps were broken for a short while. But I can fix them. I can actually use those broken pieces, put them together with gold and become a stronger person. And that is what life is asking of us. And I was telling you about Mossad Hassan Youssef. And it said, congratulations to Mossad Hassan Youssef on his 2025 Nobel Peace Prize nomination. A powerful voice for peace and freedom. And what he said is he was honored to be nominated for the 2025 Nobel Peace Prize for my work fighting terrorism and saving lives. Despite the challenges, I believe truth and courage can light the way. I'm grateful for the recognition and ready for the journey ahead. Now, he brought out a book, I think it was in about 2010, I think, called Son of Hamas. It's part history and a part biography, incredibly interesting book. He's been with the IDF in Gaza, and he said, I went into Gaza with the IDF. He said, we all cried at the destruction we saw, but we also had to look at why, what caused that destruction, why did it turn? And he said that Hamas had turned every situation into a bloodbath. And he said that's also where his tears come from. And he said that he's so honored to be nominated for the Nobel Prize and for his work in fighting terrorism and saving lives. And I really do believe that it's brought, hopefully, recognition for someone else's way of looking at things. His father was one of the founders of Hamas. So it's certainly interesting to read up about him. And he said, defeating Hamas, freeing the hostages, and ending the humanitarian crisis caused by terrorists is critical. Peace through strength is a must when all peaceful options are exhausted. But he said he's going to go on with his journey, whether he wins the Nobel Peace Prize or not. He was just very honored to be nominated. And I must admit, I was absolutely staggered that he was nominated. Now, on some good news, I wanted to tell you about a grocery store in Kiryat Moshe in Jerusalem. Get back to that shortly.
This is Finding Human with Sue Jackson, only on 101.9 High FM.
Hello, I was about to tell you a story about a grocery store in Kiryat Moshe in Jerusalem. And it was just before Shabbos, and the sign was attached to a shopping cart which was stocked with essentials. And the translation on it was, if you are in need, with love, please take. no need to ask the owner. Wishing you a Shabbos filled with deep connection to Hashem and to your loved ones. I mean, isn't that beautiful? Well, there's a very good article that I would suggest that you read if you get a chance. It's called The Israeli Attitude of Taking Their Destiny into Their Own Hands. And you can find it on Google or Safari. And it says the Israeli attitude towards the Holocaust was never, look what they did to us, but rather, never again. Israelis took their destiny into their own hands and built themselves a future. In a 1949 speech at the opening of the Weizmann Institute, the president said, the Jewish people have suffered, but we do not build our future on sorrow. We build it on science, on labor, on the vision of a state that will be a light unto the nations. Weizmann's political opponent, Prime Minister Menachem Begin, himself a Holocaust survivor, expressed similar sentiments. He said, our people have known too much pain, but we will not be defined by it. We will build a state of strength, of justice, and of hope for every Jew who dreams of a home. That's something we've got to hold on to. Then this, I would like to end with this. Sarah, thank you, Sarah Goodman from in Jerusalem, for sending this to me. It's a letter, and it says, Rabbona Shel Olam, look at us. We sit on the floor, dusty and broken, reading page after page of what we forgot. But you, do you remember what we have become? We mourn a Yerushalayim that once was. But open your eyes to the Yerushalayim that is. Every generation writes its own story. But our generation's story is like no other. Look at your children, not only in tears, but in tanks. Not just in exile, but in Eretz Yisrael, in Israel. Not hiding from the land, but running towards it. We are the anti-Meraglim. They said we cannot. We say, Hineni, here we are, we must. See our sons and daughters standing guard in cities rebuilt from ashes, fasting, not from habit, but from heart, risking everything to bring hostages home, to bring brothers and sisters back to life, back to you. Ben Sussman said, who asked us not to mourn, but to celebrate his privilege to defend his people? Rabbi Elkanah Wiesel, who taught us that we live in historic times, to be hopeful, to choose life, and to hold one another close with love and optimism. Yossi Hershkovitz, who left this world singing, I'm not afraid because you are with me. Elisha Lowenstern, who never stopped learning your Torah. Not in training, not in battle, not until the very end. A soldier with the Gemara in his hands and your name on his lips. See Agam Berger, while still in captivity, fasting on Tisha B'Av. Hear whispered tefillot in bunkers. A soldier kissing his tzitzit before battle. A mother lighting candles in a hotel room. Displaced, but not disconnected. Rachel Pollan, and all the parents who gave their own Akedat Yitzchak, sacrificing sons, not rams, not from a mountain, but from the front lines. You once wrote that we forgot you, that we left you, that we betrayed the Brit. But Hashem, look again. We never left, not really. Even in our wandering, we are searching for you. We cry, not from weakness, but from depth, from memory, from unbreakable loyalty. Even as we mourn the past, we carry its dreams into the present. Even as we sit low, we carry ourselves with pride. We are the same people who crossed the sea. I think that's so beautiful. And may I end on that I wish you all courage to cope with the anticipatory anxiety that is hitting us at the moment, to look for another way of connecting to the world, to people around you. And we're going to be singing, having a song at the end of this program called The Wing, no, not The Wings, it's I've got a blank actually. Oh, we will dance again. Thank you, Craig, and thank you all for listening.